If you're hearing this, it means tickets are now on sale for our streaming Cybactacular.
That's what we're calling the streaming show of our Star Trek V review that we toured last year. We filmed our Hollywood show, and it's going to be streaming on Thursday, May 16th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. And the stream will be available for a couple of weeks after that. If you can't watch right at the premiere time. A couple of pieces of information about this. If you support us at MaximumFun.org/join and your membership is current, check your email inbox because Maximum Fun will have emailed you a promo code to get $5 off your ticket. And also, we have some VIP packages available that include a meet and greet with me and Adam. Those are going fast, so jump on that if you want a meet and greet VIP package. Again, it's greatestgentour.com to get your tickets for the streaming Cybactacular.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage. Captain Jean-Luc Picard of the USS Enterprise.
Commander Benjamin Sisko, Federation Starbase, Deep Space Nine.
Welcome to the Greatest Generation. Deep Space Nine, a Star Trek podcast by a couple of guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. I'm Ben Harrison.
I'm Adam Pranica.
How does this day find you, my friend?
It's heating up, man. This studio home office situation, it's a hot one. And you told me. You told me that we were insane for not having air conditioning, and you're being proven more right by the day.
Yeah, it's been very caliente here in Los Angeles the last... You live on the cool side of town. I mean, not like socially cool,
no,
but the thermally cool side of town.
Yeah. In thermal only, yeah.
Yeah, but boy, I don't know how you're doing it, man. I hope you paid for the overnight shipping on whatever you've ordered to cool your place off.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to take some time. It's going to take some money. It's going to take some work. All of those happening during the hottest months, I'm told, right?
Fun. Fortunately, the hottest months last until like October, so.
Oh, cool.
You've got a while. You'll have plenty of days to appreciate having gotten it.
I was just going to say, in my previous home, I feel like when our furnace broke and we got a new one, like spring had sprung. And so we were like, oh shit, like not even going to use this thing. But that's not going to be the case
in
LA, that's for sure. I'll be content to cooling myself off with a giant tankard of iced rum and coffee.
It's so damn hot.
Is that what you're drinking?
Yeah. That's what I'm rocking today.
I woke up super early this morning because my dog was like pawing at the door, and I thought he had like a bathroom emergency, but it turned out he was just hungry.
Wow.
Yeah. He fooled me.
You, like there's an urgency to that if your special animal friend starts communicating a lot, you immediately go into triage mode.
Right. And. He's the kind of dog that will give you a zup if he's about to do a poo, you know, like if he has an emergency poo that he needs to make, he will make it known so that he doesn't have to do it inside the house.
My dog has become a as soon as we leave the house pooper, and then before we even get to the end of the block, second pooper.
Wow.
And this has happened for the last week and a half, almost. Huh. This has been the case.
Good for him. Hey, you know, speaking of walking dogs...
He's got it's like kind a of... kangaroo pouch for a butt. What's
like
going on in there?
Like son.
Yeah. I'm a proud parent.
Speaking of walking dogs, it being one of the few excuses I get to leave the house these days... I actually had a dog-related bad bit moment recently, Adam.
Wow.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
No matter what.
You're always doing
bits.
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 I was doing bits.
Bad bit moment.
Bad bit moment.
All right. What happened?
So there's a guy that I see sometimes walking my dog that is like a cool surfer SoCal guy. And he's got like shoulder length blonde hair and a golden lab and
classic SoCal surfer dude.
Yeah. And
with a SoCal surfer dog.
Yeah. He always waves hi to me and I always wave hi back. And I've never like really exchanged many words with him because I just see him in passing at the park. But the other day at the park, his dog was finishing a pee as my dog and I entered the park, and Darwin ran over to where the pee was. Instead of to say hi to the dog, Darwin went to smell the dog's pee. And I stood there while this was happening, and I said, yeah, I guess my dog's a bit of a piss freak.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
And this guy who I've like literally not talked to doesn't know my sense of humor.
You just go right there.
Just went right to piss freak. And like my face is half covered by a mask. So I imagine he didn't see how badly I blushed, but he definitely like looked at me like a, didn't see that coming, kind of.
It occurs to me that Darwin may be misnamed. I like to think of him as Bashir or Julian.
Yeah. So yeah, really bad bit moment. I joke that I like if I had done that in your presence, I think you would have appreciated it greatly. But
oh, yeah,
springing it on a stranger just does not work.
There are a lot of drawbacks to the mask socially, and most of those occur during interactions with strangers.
Totally.
Like I have found walking around here on those dog walks, it's totally different from walking around in Seattle because you are greeted as a living human being by other people in LA that you're almost totally ignored in Seattle. And so I've gotten used to this new way of being. Like you pass someone on the sidewalk, like, you know, you keep your distance, you pass on the sidewalk, there's pre-mask, there was a zep or a recognition of a person's humanity.
Yeah.
The mask makes that a lot harder. So I've been doing a lot of waving.
Waving is the new thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
I often have headphones in when I'm walking my dog, and I think I think half of the people have gone to a verbal thing. They've replaced their like smile and right. slight nod with a "Hey, how are you?" or something like that. Yeah. And the other half of the people are on the waving plan. And
yeah.
I feel bad because a lot of people say something to me and then I have to like stop and take the earbud out and go, "I'm sorry, I didn't catch that. What did you say?" And they're like, "Oh, I just said hi."
You got to, I mean, I get all up in my head about the wave thing because you have the choice of transmitting information with that maneuver. And mm-hmm. I made a mistake one time of being like wiggly fingers wave guy. You do not want to be that guy. Ben, like
yeah.
a nice crisp, almost like a handshake, right? Like you handshake and then like one pump and then you're out. Well, the way we used to handshake, no one's going to shake anyone's hand anymore for the rest of our lives. But now I feel like the single wave is the yeah. way to be. No fingers. Keep your fingers out of there.
Should we be live long and prospering people? Or is that too dorky?
I don't think I can do it, man. That is way too dorky.
Yeah, it's really dorky.
I think wiggly fingers is better than live long and prosper fingers.
Yeah, you might be right. You might be right. Live long and prosper, it says too many, like it's an uncontrolled message in the same way that wiggly fingers is, I think. Like it might mean too many unintended things.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't even know what wiggly fingers say, but I know it's not something I'm trying to say.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's like it's like a German phrase that you know, but you don't know the translation of.
It's like you're sitting down with a German speaker, and they're like, "I'm gonna do a bit on this guy by teaching him to like parrot this phrase that means something awful." that's what wiggly fingers are. It's mm-hmm. the awful German phrase that you don't know the definition of.
All I do is
bits.
No matter what.
You know, we haven't added another rule to Adam and Ben's rules of living, aka Ben and Adam's rules of living, in a long, long time. And I'm wondering if when waving at someone, do not wiggle your fingers, is a candidate for that
list.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like an important life lesson. I just pulled up the Greatest Generation wiki.
Right. That's where all those rules live, right?
I have the rules here in front of me.
All right. Let's recap.
Should we go through the rules real quick?
I think that's important. Yeah.
Okay. Rule number one, seats on airplanes must never be reclined, which is basically, we could take that off the list at this point because I'm never going to get on another airplane, but.
That's just, it's such a gut punch already.
Rule number two, don't touch the screen.
Fair.
Rule number three.
That's almost inarguable, right? Like people really love to argue about rule number one. That now, not arguable because it's not a thing anymore.
Yeah, there aren't airplanes anymore. So whether or not the seats are reclining is a moot point.
I think two has been elevated maybe into the number one position because
wow.
Especially now that most people are living and working from home, there might be, you might find something out about the person you live with or your special partner.
You're ordering a new desk lamp and your partner comes over to see the array of products that your internet search has returned.
That's a bad moment.
And they touch the screen to show you which one they like. No way. Yeah. Get your fingers off my screen.
It's no good.
All right. Number three, leave without saying goodbye. Number four, be kind and polite, tip well, and be brief with customer service people. That's a good rule.
That's like the golden rule.
Yeah.
It's perfect.
Number five, no bits on tips.
No bits on tips.
Number six, the bathroom in an RV is for number ones only.
That's a big rule.
Yeah. I mean, it's never going to come up in my life because I'm never going to have RV money, but it's a good rule.
You could be invited into an RV in a situation where you thought it was a safe harbor for a number two, but it is not.
Yeah. And then rule number seven, the Greatest Generation must be listened to at 1x.
I think those are all solid. I don't think we're kicking any of those rules out. I think some have become less relevant than others.
Yeah.
But what do you think about adding wiggle fingers to the list?
Yeah. So rule number eight.
When waving at a stranger, no wiggly fingers.
Oh, boy. It's fun to look back at these rules. We haven't talked about them in a long time.
I know. Life Rules by Ben and Adam.
Yeah. The two least qualified people to tell you how to live your life.
Yeah. This is not an advice show.
No, it sure isn't. Well, Adam, do you want to get into our super serious, joke-free Star Trek podcast?
Always ready to take an episode of Star Trek seriously with you, Ben. Let's really give this one the academic treatment. It's Deep Space Nine, Season 6, Episode 22, Valiant.
Do you realize how incredible this is? No, of course you don't.
We are opening at Quark's bar, where the drink replicator is broken. Quark is working his ass off, actually making drinks. Which seems like, I mean, you see him making drinks on a lot of episodes, but this seems to be like an especially intense drink-making situation. I like that he cracks an egg into somebody's beverage.
Quark's needs a speedwell.
That's and the problem. He's too reliant on that replicator.
Yeah. It's Dax that comes in to fix it.
You. That's right.
Because ordinarily, there's like a hierarchy of people who would fix this device.
You submit the ticket,
yeah,
and it goes to O'Brien, who then shoves it off onto Rom, who then shoves mm-hmm. it off onto Nog, and Nog doesn't give a shit about Quark, so he would not get in there expediently.
When you look at this drink replicator, what you got here is a real bartender's lament.
As you can see, the manifolds are a jumbled mess mixing lead pipes, copper, PVC, and various other materials, and they're from all different eras of the bar being in service.
This bartender has not cleared up his filters, therefore, his drink gun is going to be clogged most of the time.
I wouldn't want to suck down the bacteria-filled beverages in this dive for all the money in the world.
It's so gross.
Yeah.
When they pull down this panel, there's something instinctually revolting about the mix of technology and wet.
Yeah, totally.
You know, like when the panel's dropped and you see all the lights, but you also see viscosity. Ugh. It's gross.
It's a very like David Cronenberg feel. Right. And yeah, I think that like maybe, like I think it's a very effective little moment, except for they also smeared the green goo on just the face of the replicator. And I think it would have been a little bit better if he'd like cleaned up the kind of cosmetic thing. And then when she'd opened it, it had revealed how gross it was.
Yeah.
Because like, I think that as a businessman, especially like a food service business, you are hiding the grossness from the customer. You know, like if you walk into a restaurant and you see chicken carcasses and the garbage can, you're like, ew, I don't want to be here. Like part of it is the theatrics of this beautiful plate of food just appeared on my plate and I didn't have to see any of the sausage get made.
Is that the reason outside of like slip and fall safety why there's like the waffle flooring behind the bar, why there's the rubber mat where drinks are prepared? Like,
right, yeah.
Because you want to catch the shit, but you also need to hide it.
Right, yeah. You want it to be a little bit discreet.
Yeah.
So Dax is doing Nog a solid, filling in on repair duty because Nog is on a trip.
Nog had a chance to take a trip to Ferenginar, and I told him that I would cover for him while he was away.
Yeah. With, for some reason, Jake. Quark takes great umbrage with the idea that both Nog is heading to Ferenginar and also that Dax is his super. And Odo picks up right away that it's not so much that he believes that Dax is overqualified for this.
Yeah.
It is because of Quark's infatuation with her.
Odo has real, like, first guy in high school to get a girlfriend energy, where suddenly he's the expert on relationships and love because he got a girlfriend.
It sucks. Cut it out, Odo.
Fuck you, Odo.
I don't really enjoy that the outshot of this scene is also Quark full on staring at Dax's ass for 5 seconds before we cut to the runabout.
Yeah, like if we're going to have Odo catching Quark in something, let's have him catch him do that, you know?
That's a great call. Like, I think you could re-edit the scene with the footage that they have and
totally
change how that feels entirely.
Yeah, and make Quark, you know, peg the needle with what a dirtbag Quark is.
Theater in the round, eh, Quark? You don't see trunk space like that on a mid-size runabout.
When the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie.
There's a reuniting of the Nojay Consortium on the runabout Shenandoah.
The Nojay Consortium. Never heard of it.
It's Jake and Nog. Nog admits that this is a mission. This is a courier mission for him. He's been tasked with personally taking a message from the Federation to the Grand Nagus, and for some reason, Jake is there to tag along.
Pretty nuts for Nog to be trusted with a high-level diplomatic communique like this. This is the Federation making an explicit overture to the Ferengi Alliance to join the war with the Dominion, and they give it to... I mean, like... You know, they make the case he's the only Ferengi in Starfleet, which is worth mentioning, but also, like, give me a fucking break. It's Nog.
It makes total sense that he would be a part of the mission. It makes no sense that there is not also a diplomat with him.
Right.
At least stick a diplomat in the runabout that's tasked with dying, you know?
Yeah.
Like, at least begin there.
So they head out toward Ferenginar from Starbase 3, blah, 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 and... In pretty short order, they detect that they are not alone in this part of space.
they roll over the part of space they're in, and the log reveals just a bunch of ticks underneath, and they're heading the wrong way.
I think that we see 5 ticks in the in the view screen, and they just go right past them, but then one circles back for the Shenandoah. I think all 5 should have just licked a shot at them.
Yeah.
You know?
That would have been easy. Especially if you're the jammer and not the jammed.
Right.
Because that's one of the things that Nog complains about pretty fast as soon as they leave the starbase. He's like, you know, for some reason our sensors are jammed and we can't communicate, and then blam, here's all the ticks. But the ticks don't have that problem.
Right.
The ticks can sense that the runabout is headed their way.
Uh-oh. Right. Yeah. And it's strange. There's a pretty like jazzy camera shot kind of swooping across the bridge as they start taking evasive maneuvers and trying to outrun these ticks that reveals that the control panels on the Shenandoah are really fucked up and lived in. Did you see this?
I noticed that too. It's the part where they took like a structural pillar out from between the forward windows.
Yeah.
So they could fit the camera behind there. And all you see is like the place where that structure was, and it's not covered.
Yeah.
It looks like nails were ripped up and out of it.
Yeah. It doesn't look like a clean piece of technology. It looks like fucked up plywood, you know?
The camera move, I think, is one that they're hoping is so unique that that's where your attention is. Like you're looking at faces and you're experiencing a camera move instead of really taking in the place.
I think it's also one of those we're shooting for SDTV and maybe this gets cut off on 9 out of 10 TVs.
Gets a little muddy with resolution.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't know. It was weird. It was what I noticed in the shot, but it is like a new kind of, thing, right? Like that kind of, inside the cockpit of the X-Wing kind of camera work that they're working with.
It felt like a greater usage of the runabout space here than we've ever gotten before. And it's not just that shot, the establishing shot inside the Shenandoah, also shooting from behind as that door to the rear opens. It felt like a new perspective on the ship that we haven't gotten much before.
Totally.
The shot from the fruit bowl. That's what that is. Fruit bowl angle.
Yeah. It's wild to think that like they're in season 6 with the runabout and somebody came up with some new stuff to do with them camera work wise.
This was a Michael Vihar episode of Vihar and Viharder fame. If you remember that story.
Yeah. I mean, I wonder if it's also partly going to CG instead of model miniatures for the exteriors thing, because like they can make those shots so much more dynamic with CG. I wonder if they need to kind of step up the camera work on the interiors to match that.
Yeah, I wonder. I like that instinct. You don't want your practical stuff blown away.
No.
It's not going to fit.
It'll look bad. Gold Dukat.
After the theme, we learn that Nog floored it into Dominion-held space, and they're getting deeper in Dominion-held space. This is a bad strategy by Nog, who sort of like brushes Jake off in a, like, this is the only place we could go. Mm-hmm. Like, we're being chased. What do you want me to do?
And, they start to get a lot of holes punched in their runabout.
Did you notice what the computer said when the tick was attacking the Shenandoah?
No.
So they're getting bangers dropped on them, and the Luoxana Troy voice comes on the blower and says,
"Warning, we are within range of enemy weapons."
I thought that was a really bizarre statement. Like, I've never heard a computer say "we."
Right. The computer usually refers to the ship in like the third person. It doesn't have an I.
This felt like a very strange editing omission. Like, I feel like there is a show Bible about how the computer speaks, and I don't think "we" is ever said by computer voice.
That's very strange.
It definitely caught my attention.
Yeah.
Activate escape pods. Send out the log boy. All hands abandon ship.
Fortunately, the cavalry comes in, and this is a ship that they initially misidentify as the little D, but it is in fact the little V, which is kind enough to take out this tick and beams Jake and Nog aboard. And this is a very familiar set. The interiors of the Valiant look just like the interiors of the Defiant. Very right. Cheap television.
Everything is tilted slightly like that sister station to Deep Space Nine.
Totally.
Chief Petty Officer Kelly Clarkson is who they meet, who's transported them on board. This is Dorian Collins.
Yeah. Yeah. She's sort of the Chief O'Brien of the Valiant. She's got an interesting... She's got the Chief O'Brien pip on one side and then kind of an interesting brooch on the other side of her collar. And she takes them up to the bridge where a bunch of Starfleet cadet uniformed Starfleets, all wearing this collar brooch, are finishing up their fight with the tick. They you know, fire a full spread of torpedoes with maximum yield, take that thing out.
All ships destroyed, Captain. Begin rescue of the stranded crew.
It's a very strange environment. It's Red Squad. It's a bunch of college kids working this warship.
It's the USS Parents on Vacation.
It's a real Lord of the Ticks situation.
It is. We get... There's something about the quality of Tim Waters, the ship's commanding officer, that I think is ably performed. Like Paul Popowicz is like, he's Jasper from Jasper's Law on 90210. Like he's a little bit typecast as a guy with a punchable face. And he's got Ben Affleck teeth before the teeth job. And like, there's so much about him that is just like, not right, from the way that he interacts with people to the way that he like swings his command chair around, like everything just seems unearned about him.
Right, he's got like performative world weariness where he wants people to think of him as a 49-year-old captain who's logged 20,000 hours in the chair, and what he really is a college student. For all intents and purposes. And
right. This is very like USS ROTC.
Yeah. I wondered if the casting cast for height, because Jake is so much taller than everyone else in this crew in a way that
it's so clear in this episode.
Yeah. Like they found actors that were on the shorter side to kind of like underscore how young they're supposed to be.
Yeah, the actor who plays Ferris is the same height as Aaron Eisenberg.
Wow!
Like, and when they're together in a scene, you can really tell.
Commander,
Ensign.
So the Captain Tim welcomes them aboard and explains that that they've been field promoted. He was field promoted to captain of the ship, and in his capacity as captain of the ship, has field promoted all of the other members of Red Squad. And they've been out here for 8 months prosecuting the war as though they are a ship in Starfleet.
The captain ordered me to take command of the Valiant.
It's unbelievable.
I think this scene is really well done when he kind of over-explains his authority and his origin story.
Yeah, yeah.
It feels like a guy, like we know the ship has been out for 8 months or whatever, and this guy has had nothing but time to practice what he was going to say the first time he had to explain himself. And it feels very practiced.
Yeah, yeah. Spoiler alert, but I'm sad that he died in this episode because I wanted to see him explain it to somebody who actually had some authority over him.
Yeah.
Like, I wanted to...
I agree.
I think it would have been so fun to see him say it in exactly this tone of voice to Captain Sisko. Or Admiral Beltbuckle.
All right, as you wish.
There is a visual language to this moment, too, that caught my eye. So, like, Waters is sitting back in his command chair, and this is a location we've been in 1,000 times. When a captain speaks to a subordinate, leaning back in their chair. But this is the first time I remember the laptop covering up, like, almost half of the frame. And what do we know about compositions that are... that are created this way. Like, this is a character covering for something. This is a character with something to hide.
Yeah.
Like, this is that language being spoken.
And also, like, that huge Starfleet Academy Red Squad logo on the wall is, like, it is, like, comically big.
You can't take someone seriously if they've got, like, a movie poster in their office and they're, like, an executive, yeah. You know?
Yeah, yeah. He offers Nog a bottle of water and he's like, so what are you working on these days?
Right, right.
Jake's getting fixed up in Six Bay and Nog is getting promoted to chief engineer of the ship. And it's kind of fun that they get separated for a little while, right? Like,
right, right.
Because Jake doesn't see Nog again for a long time.
And they each have very different experiences while they're apart, and it really engenders the conflict that happens between them later.
Yeah, I think one thing we maybe forgot to mention is that Jake talked to Nog a little bit about the fact that he was interested in doing a little bit of reporting on this trip to Ferenginar. Like, he was interested in maybe getting exclusive with the Grand Nagus for the Federation News Service. And now, like, he is onto a story that nobody knows exists, but he doesn't seem to be, like, in reporter mode for much of the beginning of this episode. The temptation to, like, you know, pull out the pad and start taking notes doesn't seem to get to him just yet.
This is about the part in the episode when there's a lot I love about this episode, but the story really falls apart when you start to scratch the surface of, like, the spatial geography of things.
Yeah.
Because if this ship has been tasked with charting the border of Federation space,
right,
they've been at it for 8 months, all of the adults die, and then they find themselves moments away from the starbase that Jake and Nog just left. We're told a little later that they must maintain radio silence. Like, there's so many contradictory pieces of information here.
Yeah.
Well,
that's the other reason that I'm sad that Captain Tim buys it, is that to me, it seemed that Captain Tim had kind of made up the radio silence thing. And that he had, like, taken the orders that were meant for the real officer that was on board the ship and assumed the responsibility of doing those orders.
Do you think that's what the story is?
Yeah, yeah. I think that's what the story is, but it's never said explicitly in the episode.
It's really interesting that it isn't explicit, and it's better that it's not.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you could interpret it otherwise too.
To be quite honest about it, I was in a pail.
Mr. Bucket,
I have to revert back to my dead state.
Some chief engineers are born with warp cores, but Nog is the type of chief engineer that has a warp core thrust upon him.
This is not something that you throw away.
This is the other great piece of story utility in this, which is, like, okay, we can reuse all the sets from the little D, but we can also have it be a convenient story element that Nog knows his way around this type of engine.
Yeah.
And he can, like, make expert suggestions to the first officer about, like, the, you know, the intermix system or whatever.
Have you recalibrated the lateral impulse control system?
No. What does that have to do with the injectors?
He's pretty rapidly field promoted, and that's where he goes while Jake goes and hangs out in the mess hall.
There's a euphoria to the moment where you feel like you're in a group of people that are either professionally or socially of a higher class than yourself.
Yeah.
When you feel like you make it, you said the right thing at the right time, and all of a sudden you're part of the club. That moment for Nog here is pronounced. He has a solution to their warp drive problem. He's invited into a squad that he's always wanted to be in and has been ostracized from. It's great. That's the hook. Like, he's hooked, and he will be hooked throughout the episode because of it. Like, he's finally where he's always wanted to be.
The mission is that was sent on the assumption that there were still adults aboard to the USS Valiant is get some intel on this crazy Jem'Hadar ship that is operating somewhere in nearby space and get the intel back to Starfleet. And they've been able to like determine the location of this ship, but because the warp engine has been badly disabled, they've never been able to get close enough to it to complete the mission. And so with Nog aboard, they can finally get their engine going fast enough to find this ship and get a close look at it.
It feels like a very Crimson Tide adjacent story, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but except for blindly firing nuclear missiles without secondary confirmation, they've got command of a little D for as long as they choose to have it because of this radio silence mandate.
Yeah. Unlike Crimson Tide, where the radio is broken in this, mm-hmm. in this mm-hmm. episode, the radio has been turned off unilaterally by the commanding officer.
You ever watch Star Trek?
I don't know if I wish this, but it would have been interesting to see Waters throw his sabot into the communication system.
Yeah.
Hence the word sabotage.
For some reason, Jake is in the mess hall with the chief, and he starts talking to her about, you know, where she's from, talking to her about what it's like to grow up on the moon. And she's been away from home for a long time. She speaks very poetically about what living on the moon is like, and she's really homesick.
She dominates this scene. This actor who plays Collins, Ashley Brianne McDonough.
Yeah. She doesn't have a lot of credits, but she's so good.
She sinks her teeth into this like she's Charlton Heston in Wayne's World. Like, I was totally shocked by this. And
yeah.
I was not prepared for how seriously she monologued her experience.
Dawn is so shocking on the moon.
It belonged because it felt true to her character, but it also felt like it didn't belong because no one else was taking their stories as seriously as she was.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah. I want to know what happened with this actor because it doesn't seem like she worked that much, but she's so good.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel like if Nana Visitor had been on set this day, she would have been like, hey, like an 8 is good. Like, take it from me. Take it from me. You can cut these people's heads off if you go all the way to 10, like dial it back. In engineering, Nog is proposing the violation of a bunch of safety regulations in order to solve their warp speed limit problem. This is inspired by Chief O'Brien. This is what O'Brien does every day.
Yeah. O'Brien has apparently broken 50 regulations to get the little D working the way it does. And Nog is working from his playbook. And suddenly the command staff of this essentially hijacked starship are concerned about following the rules.
Right.
But Lieutenant Commander Nog talks his way past this. What was up with him being Lieutenant Commander but having Lieutenant Pips?
The Pips thing is something I thought a lot about because, like, all of these little kids are wearing Pips.
Yeah.
Like, Waters is wearing the 4 Pips. Did he take them off of the body of his dead captain? Do you just replicate the Pips, or are the Pips unreplicatable so that you can't get stolen Pip valor? You know, by going into Cisco's restaurant.
Right.
Getting the 4 Pip discount.
Right. I don't think that... I feel like they've got to just be a replicator thing.
One of the scenes I really love from Star Trek Picard was Rios going through all of his old Starfleet things, and it's like a shoebox full of Pips.
Yeah, yeah, he had a zillion Pips.
It made it seem as though the Pips had a value to them
right.
that was unreplicatable.
Right, and like it seems like you get issued a whole new set of Pips every time you go up a rank. It's not like if you're an ensign and you're being made a lieutenant, it's not that they just give you one more Pip. It's that they give right. you the full 2 Pips, right?
Right.
So some Pip issues in this episode.
Right. Collins, who last we saw her had just been crying in the mess hall with Jake, has changed venues. She's gone to a second location to cry, that being the infirmary on the ship when Waters walks in and goes for the pillbox.
Captain Tim is raiding the ship pharmacy And we begin to understand that he's been popping some pills to take the edge off the pressures of command.
Looks like I picked the wrong week. Quit sniffing glue.
And he notices that Chief Collins is having a problem. And in classic guy who has just taken some illicit drugs way, is like, are you upset about something? Fucking deal with it!
There is something wildly anachronistic about pills on Star Trek. You know? Why do they exist?
Have we ever seen anyone take a pill on Star Trek before this?
No, I can't think of a single time. This should be a hypo spray. What is he doing?
Yeah. That would be...
Not all aliens keep their throats in the same place, right?
Right, yeah. It would be great to see him, like, come in, take off his shoe, hypo spray between the toes. Captain, I had no idea.
Want to do a hit?
Yeah. All the medicine is in gummy form.
The next scene is Jake Sisko getting hauled into Captain Tim's ready room, where Commander Karen wants to see his manager. Because he's gotten Chief Collins very upset, and they don't like him stirring the pot on their ship.
They're pissed that he made Collins cry.
Yeah.
For some reason, Jake squints in incredulity here. Like, I love the shot reverse shotness of this moment.
Yeah.
He cannot believe it.
He sure can.
And this is another example of what you were talking about before, Ben, where like the way they shoot and block this scene makes Jake look very tall.
Yeah.
Shooting him from below, and Waters, they shoot as much shorter. They shoot him from above to emphasize this.
I almost wanted Jake to be like, I'm 3 years older than you. Like, yeah. You don't really control me. The second my father finds out about what you're up to, you're in a huge amount of trouble, is basically the subtext of this scene.
I wonder, like, all of the actors who play crew people on the USS Parents on Vacation are good. They're good actors, and I like all of them, but I wonder if they should be younger for that reason, to make that difference more pronounced, because there's never a point in this episode, and save for very few, that I feel like Jake is the elder of them. I never feel that way.
This is the only scene that it really felt that way to me, and I think partly it's the text of the scene and partly the way it's shot, because also Captain Tim is seated, so the camera is above his eyeline, looking down. And then the camera's kind of at the same level, but looking up at Jake. So Jake looks like a man who is standing above a kid.
Right. Jake is dismissed with great condescension, leaving Captain Tim and Exo Karen together in a suggestion that they may be a couple of horny teens.
Yeah.
That's the feeling that I got.
Yeah.
I wonder why that subtext wouldn't be injected a little more. Like, in like when Captain Tim dies, you expect Karen to super feel it in that moment.
Yeah, yeah. Or maybe she's just so far gone at that point, so scared that it doesn't register.
Yeah, Karen and I dated for a few weeks. Now, the only thing that gets me through are these pills. These, for some reason, pills.
So this is when Jake and Nog finally meet back up, and Nog is busting because he's got his Red Squad insignia, he's got his extra pip.
Jerry, I'm busting!
He should have two extra pips, but he just has the one extra pip. He's so excited to tell Jake about how he is now chief engineer of the USS Parents Out of Town.
He's psyched, and you can't help but feel happy for him, even though his promotion is unearned. Like, that's basically the main thing about Nog, is this is what he's always wanted, and he's finally gotten it.
And he's gotten this ship moving a lot faster, because as they're having, like, they don't quite have a long enough conversation to have Jake kind of explain how foobar the situation is. Like, Nog has definitely, like, let his head get gassed up a little bit by getting, like, a cool field promotion. But we don't even get to see them have the conflict of, like, maybe we should not listen to these freaks because it's red alert, and they head up to the bridge. And
they found the battleship.
Yeah, they're on the tail of this giant battleship.
That ship out there is twice the size of a Galaxy-class ship and three times as strong.
That's accurate.
Pretty awesome sounding. For some reason, Jake is not welcome on the bridge, and that's because he's just asking questions like he doesn't belong there. They're trying to do a job.
Commander Karen puts him in his place.
I don't remember anyone inviting you to the bridge.
After the commercial, we get a Tim's log bringing us up to speed. They launch this probe, and the data from the probe is totally valuable. It's revealed some weaknesses in this Jem'Hadar battleship that would seem to be exploitable.
It's a small thermal exhaust port right below the main port.
And this is a pitch that Captain Tim makes to the assembled crew in the mess hall. He's like, mission accomplished, guys. We were sent out here to get intel on this thing, and we've gotten it. But shouldn't we also destroy it? And the drawbacks to this plan are listed in this scene. They need to get within 300 meters of this giant battleship in order to shoot a torpedo that is manually targeted.
A precise hit will start a chain reaction which should destroy the station.
Nog is going to have to specially modify a torpedo, taking out all the guidance stuff and putting in some kind of radiation jammer. And what it'll do is exploit what they believe to be a critical design flaw in this giant Jem'Hadar battleship. And for some reason, Jake speaks up and he says, like, this is not bullseyeing womp rats, guys. Like, this is something that my dad and his actual crew of actual Starfleet officers would not attempt, given what the condition of this ship. And I think you guys should for sure not do this. And Captain Tim really uses this to marshal the enthusiasm of his crew in a way that is really stunning. Like, it's almost like he wanted Jake to naysay this so that he could whip Red Squad into a frenzy by saying, nothing is impossible to us.
Who rules?
I think the thing that really pushes Captain Tim over the edge on this plan is Exo Karen's veiled shot at him by comparing the weakness of this Jem'Hadar battleship to Captain Tim's sexual prowess.
It seems like they might not last that long, even in a battle situation.
I think Captain Tim knows what a reference to wet pasta is truly referring to.
For some reason, Jake and Nog wind up in the engineering section doing surgery on a torpedo. And Captain Tim is actually watching the surveillance camera of them and listening. You know, he's like popping pills and listening into their conversation.
Like every great paranoid. You know, this. I thought this was a great scene.
Yeah. And it's getting out, right, that he's like taking these pills. Jake mentions it to Nog because Jake heard from Dorian. The secret is out.
Nog tries to Starfleet explain Jake in this scene as if Jake doesn't know.
Right.
Like what being in Starfleet's all about by virtue of being Jake Sisko. If I'm for some reason Jake, am I also for some reason looking for an exit strategy at this point? I think I would be.
Yeah.
At this point, where's the nearest life raft?
I would maybe be like stashing a few things that I know I want with me in the nearest escape pod.
If he is headed to an escape pod, he doesn't make it because when he leaves engineering, he's immediately arrested by Shepard, which is the Red Squadron guy we knew from Paradise Lost. He's the guy that helped Admiral Layton launch the coup attempt, right?
Oh, shit, yeah.
You remember this guy's face? He's got the Gary Busey teeth.
He does have the Gary Busey teeth.
He's got a very familiar face.
Yeah.
Like, he's been in a lot of stuff.
Yeah, he's been, like, a background actor in a lot of stuff. Mm-hmm. I mean, yeah. Paul Popowicz and Courtney Peldon, Tim and Karen, have also done a lot, and specifically a lot of like sci-fi genre stuff, which I think is probably why I recognize the three of them, is like, is like they, you know, pop up in a corny monster movie that's like 30 things to the right on some row on the Netflix, you know, and I'll be like, well, wife's asleep, I'm drunk, let's see what this dumb thing is.
That's using your time wisely.
Yeah.
After, for some reason, Jake is thrown into the clink, we get a montage of preparation, and I ordinarily love a scene like this. We're checking our weapons, we're making sure everything's shipshape before this battle to come. But it's during this montage that we really get a feeling that Red Squad has a diversity problem.
Red Squad, Red Squad's got a look, doesn't it?
It really does, and it makes me get like low-key Hitler Youth vibes. And I don't think that that's an accident.
There's a couple of aliens, but they're crucially white aliens, you know?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
And that is a really weird choice. Like, and I think that that's, you know, partly just 90s casting racism, but it's also, you know, this is a show that styled itself as we're breaking down barriers and telling stories that couldn't be told on other shows. And there's no Uhuras in Red Squad.
That's a great title.
Morn.
Dear sweet.
Morn.
You near, buddy?
Morn.
Stop. Hammer time.
Captain Waters has walked the little V, and he finds himself in 10 forward, where Guinan asks him what he's doing. Captain Tim's like, I thought it was a tradition for captains to walk the ship on the eve of a great battle. Guinan's like, you're not a great captain, and this is going to be a bloodbath.
You're not even really a captain, Captain Tim.
Yeah, yeah, no, instead, Captain Tim, he gets to do all of the great captainship that you want. If you want to be captain more than anything, you want to do this on the 1MC address of the crew before a big battle.
Yeah.
He's loving this.
I felt like there was some great writing in not letting him monologue too much, because
what if he's great?
What if he's great?
You don't want him to be good at this.
What if he's great is a question you ask yourself. You also ask yourself, like, what if he kills this huge Jem'Hadar warship and then comes home and has to like accept the rank of ensign and start his career over? Like, he's spoiled, right? Like, he can't be somebody's subordinate from now on, because he's been off
the curse of success,
fighting his own war with his own warship for 8 months.
Yeah.
It's analogous to what has happened to us with our dumb podcast, where we're unhirable now.
Right. Yeah. He's a loner, daddy. The Jem'Hadar battleship is pretty awesome looking.
Yeah.
We've seen it before, but this is the most we've seen it.
And it's a pretty like kinetic battle sequence with this Jem'Hadar destroyer.
Mm-hmm.
And a very exciting and well done battle too, because like they really explain like what the goal is. I mean, it's like what if the Death Star sequence from Star Wars didn't work?
Right.
You know, is basically what this posits.
I love that the little V flies in the space between the spoiler and the trunk lid on this thing.
I was so worried because that one guy gets taken out by all those girders and Shepard turns around right as they're going through that gap. And I was like, Shepard, look at what you're doing, man.
If you're a guest star in this episode and you haven't read the entire script, and maybe your first shooting day, you notice like you're shooting out a sequence. There's a bunch of carts loaded up with girders. I think you have to have a bad feeling about your character surviving this one, because it's bangers and girders for the rest of the ep.
It is
pretty great sequence.
Girder mass murder.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they come around for their pass on the weak spot that they believe to exist. And there's a pretty great explosion in space, except for when the when the dust settles, the ship is still there, and it is still just as capable and deadly as it was before.
Didn't go in.
Just impacting on the surface.
Didn't this feel to you like the first time the Enterprise went back and fought a Borg ship in that Q episode?
Yeah.
Like, they're just raining torpedoes onto it, and as soon as the blast clears, it's just still there and still coming.
It is fine.
Yeah.
They didn't go for a close-up and show the ship like putting itself back together, which I loved about that first Borg episode.
Everyone is starting to get fallen samurai hair too.
Totally.
On the bridge. It's great.
Yeah, one thing that we haven't talked about is how many like panels and parts of this ship show battle damage as they're walking around it. There's lots of like scorched bits on the ship, and it's clear that they like don't really know how to maintain the ship in the same way as a professional crew would.
Right.
But like it also falls apart even bigger than other Starfleet ships, if you can believe it. And this battle culminates with the entire crew and Captain Tim getting a taste of their own girder.
Lay in a new course! 127 Mark 3!
You know, this is a sequence that underscores an observation you made earlier, which is like you need those little details to be equal to all of the exterior shots that we get. Because the exterior shots reveal that this battleship is just fucking stomping them.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're like big holes getting taken out, like as they start to list the number of hull sections that are exposed to space, it's just the exteriors of the ship are just as
Karen's
upsetting.
Like, it would be more expedient if you could just tell me which decks are still intact. The sequence where the little V is destroyed is so great. We're getting what feels like a brand new comp of this class of ship. We're getting details of panels opening up and escape pods bursting forth. We're getting those escape pods being shot and destroyed.
Yeah.
It is ugly.
Yeah, the Jem'Hadar fight dirty, and they're shooting
the parachuters.
They're taking out the parachuters, and it's Chief Collins, Nog, and Jake like make it into the last lifeboat, and they are the only ones that survive.
Really fun nod to Spaceballs when Nog gets into one of the escape pods without looking, like back in first, and he puts that alien's arms across his lap like a seatbelt. Uh-huh. Good stuff.
Yeah. Why did they have a zoo aboard the USS Valiant?
I don't know. Great for morale.
Yeah, I guess so. Unclear how long they are adrift before the little D finds them.
Yeah. We don't have interiors of these ever, right? Have they ever been shot? I feel like in Star Trek First Contact, we saw the exteriors of those pods, but I don't know if we ever saw inside one with the door open, right?
No, I don't believe we have. I feel like Starfleet would have a real nice, roomy escape pod, you know?
Yeah, something with a fruit bowl.
Yeah.
Area.
Yeah.
So the Defiant picks up this distress call from the escape pods. They cloak and investigate, and then we get this dissolve to Ben, Sisko, and Jake. Mid-conversation. And what's interesting about cutting in on them mid-conversation is they also cut away mid-conversation in an edit I can't remember another example of on this show.
Right. Yeah, it feels very modern television, right?
Yeah.
That you come in media res and come out in media res.
Yeah. Interesting technique. In the infirmary, we learn that Collins has a skull fracture. Nog's going to be fine medically, but it's unclear if his confidence will ever be 100%.
Yeah.
He's pretty shattered.
He's got some regrets, and I think it's like a little unclear whether their regrets surrounding like getting his head gassed up by the glory of Red Squad and getting to participate, or just regrets over the mission went not well, you know? This war has been going on for a while, but spending a bunch of time aboard a Starfleet ship and then having it get destroyed around us and having to make it out on a life raft really re-centers how scary the war is, you know?
That's a great call. It takes, you know, so often it takes a big ship being destroyed on Star Trek to really feel the stakes of a thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You need to lose a big pot.
Yeah.
That's what they did. I gotta believe if you're in Dr. Bashir's six bay, you're looking very closely at the color bag that they stick on the hook for your IV, right?
Oh, like sorry, one's for me later.
The classic banana bag for someone who's dehydrated, it's not gonna work. You don't want to see that.
Yeah.
On the hook over your bed.
Collins comes to as Jake and Nog are having their rap sesh about what happened, and Jake is going to write the story, and Nog wants him to write a story about a great ship and a great crew that blew it. And Collins wakes up and is like, still a loyal member of cult Captain Tim.
I really like this moment in the ep because it plays with your expectations. You're expecting a cadet to feel lucky that she's alive,
yeah,
and changed by the experience. But the horrible truth of this moment is that she's unchanged by the experience.
If he failed, it's because we failed him.
She's a true believer, and that's doubly horrible because she's the one that put Jake onto the fact that Captain Tim was struggling with addiction, you know, like, mm-hmm. like Captain Tim was not in his right mind, and also like got him and his entire crew killed, and she still fully believes in him.
She still believes in Jasper's Law. I know you don't get that reference.
I don't.
Paul Popowicz played the lead singer of a band called Jasper's Law in 90210.
Okay.
We see that Collins is unchanged, but Nog is.
Yeah.
Nog will be changed forever by this. He takes his Red Squad pin and presses it into Collins' hand to give it back.
He may even have been a great man, but in the end, he was a bad captain.
He's quitting the squad.
In the end, Captain Tim sucked.
That's the big takeaway.
That's the big takeaway, Collins.
But did the episode, Ben, is my question, did you like it?
You really want to do this? Here, now, okay, let's do it!
I kind of like the episode. I think you really need to extend your suspension of disbelief around the idea that a Federation ship, A, survived 8 months of the war without any, like, resupply or regroup, and B, that it was a Federation ship that was operated entirely by cadets that didn't actually know what they were doing.
Right.
But I think that there is some pretty well-drawn stuff about, like, the hubris of adolescence and the, like, because it's not Lord of the Flies, right? Like, it's not we revert to our inner evil when we don't have the structure of society over us. It's that, like, the structure of society, like, brought the inner evil out of Captain Tim, and because he was able to mau-mau the rest of the crew, he succeeded in this, like, improbable fiefdom for a little while. And I think that that's, like, a much more interesting story than Lord of the Flies in a lot of ways. And I think Star Trek is a fun and interesting place to tell a story like that. And I like a Nog episode. I think that it's an interesting and good episode to, like, test Nog's mettle as a character. And Jake's, to be honest.
Yeah.
How about you?
I'm with you on the need to suspend a great deal of disbelief to enjoy the ep. I think both of us were able to in order to get there with it. But I could have gone for a little more Lord of the Flies. I could have gone for a little more kid finds his parents' gun. Like, that's what the little V is. It is a weapon. And it also represents freedom. And I don't know that you could get 40 teenagers together,
yeah,
on a ship like this and expect them to a person be all about the mission. Some of those kids miss their parents Ben, you know, some of those kids want to fuck. Not all of those kids are going to be chanting Red Squad in the commissary. And this would have made a really interesting 3-episode arc of experiencing a crew that has had responsibility thrust upon them start to fray a little bit. And I'm not asking for like Order of the Hand, you know, burn barrels in a hallway situation on the little V, but a little bit of dissension, I think, would have made it, I think would have been some nice spice to the thing, especially like the place where I was looking for that most was between Tim and Karen.
Yeah.
Like, you get the suggestion that there may be more of a relationship that's just than is just professional there, but where it's unclear in what direction that may be. And I think that's interesting stuff that goes unexplored.
I think that if Tim and Karen had fucked, that would have been interesting. If Nog and Collins had fucked, there would have been even more weight to that moment at the end when he says that Captain Tim was a bad captain.
I agree with you, Ben. Sexualize Nog. That's what we need to do on this show.
That is what this show was missing.
You know what I liked maybe most of all in this ep? The new cadet uniforms are badass.
Yeah, they're good.
I feel like they should be the main character episodes. I like that they're not black, that they're like pewter.
Yeah, and you can kind of... I think like the black uniforms, they just like don't work that well on video, I think.
Yeah.
You know? Like they
they just disappear.
And they don't work that well in film either. Like the when we saw the like original Deep Space Nine uniforms in the one Star Trek film that they were in, Star Trek Generations, they looked bad then too, you know?
Yeah. This is a show that's trying to find its way costume wise, I think, at this point in time.
Well, do you want to find your way to some Priority One messages, Adam?
Sure do.
Priority One message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Our first Priority One message is from Ari, and it's to Mark. And it goes like this. Happy anniversary! The last 5 years have been a blast. I'm so lucky to be in love with my best bro. Thank you for always being my side and even pretending to laugh at my bits. It means the world to me. Ben and Adam, thanks for making great pod to listen to on the long drive back and forth to Norfolk. It made the distance seem not so far.
Pretty sweet stuff here. Ben, my copy editor heart took note of a thing that I know you also did. When you refer to someone as being your side, there is a connotation here. I don't know if Mark is Ari's side piece. I don't believe that's the suggestion.
I think my guess is that Ari meant to say thank you for always being at my side.
Right.
But
whatever it is, the feeling is very strong between them.
Ari is also a person that is prone to having bad bit moments, it sounds like. And if that is true, capable of making mistakes. So,
right.
We're very familiar with that lifestyle.
God, we sure are. Ben, our second Priority One message is from a fellow space traveler stuck way out for just a little while, and it's to the FOD. Ben, Adam, and anybody who is feeling stuck in orbit. Message goes like this. Being adrift in time and space, I figured I'd float the buoy and beam a signal to all you lovelies out there. Stay strong, and may these nerd thoughts please you. Thought number one, change leader thinks of solids the same way Mr. Futterman does foreign products. Great pull.
Wow.
Agree?
That's something that you'll have to elucidate for yourself by listening to our great Gremlins bonus episode in the Max Fund donor feed.
Kentucky Harvester. Thought number two, Cisco should be promoted to Commodore immediately.
Wow.
I mean, if you do that, does he stay on the station or is someone promoted into captain over there?
There's some TOS episode where there's a Commodore that they meet that's like the head of a starbase, right?
Mm-hmm. Commodore Mendez is who I was thinking of from the TOS episode.
That's the one. He's Commodore of the starbase that that Wheelchair Pike lives at.
Thought number three in this message is, which term is more cringy? Treknology or Star Tech?
Ooh.
Both pretty cringy there.
Both pretty cringy. I think Star Tech is worse because it doesn't even get you to what we're talking about.
Did you ever have the Motorola Star Tech phone?
I never had a flip phone. I was just thinking about that the other day. I never had a phone with a hinge on it, Adam.
That was my first cellular phone, and I got
it.
That was its name. Ben, I used tuition money on it. That was dumb. I wouldn't recommend that. So, yeah.
Did you get your first cell phone in college?
I did. Yeah.
Wow.
I never had a pager. I skipped pager on the evolution of teenagerdom.
I had an alphanumeric pager before I had a cell phone, and I had a cell phone when I was in high school.
See, I thought not having a pager would give me a greater sense of freedom. Freedom being a prized aspect of being a teenager, but I didn't really leave the house much, so...
Yeah.
Didn't really matter. Yeah.
I had that pager, thought I was cool until no one paged me on it.
Right. Yeah, you get the bill with the list of incoming pages, and there's nothing there.
Just my mom's phone number.
It's the page that comes in to tell you that your bill is due.
Yeah, it's that.
Well, you get billed right away for filling out a Priority One message by going over to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron. Both flavors, both the personal and the commercial, are messages that go a long, long way towards helping with the financial production of The Greatest Generation, and we thank you.
We sure do. Gotta get that gold press light. Get that gold press light.
Am I right? Yeah. Am I right? When I was growing up, I didn't have anyone to tell me about personal grooming. I had to learn these things on my own. So I'm here to save you some embarrassment. Recommend the grooming tools that I use, the products from Manscaped. Now, this is a company that constantly has its mind on your bush. Imagine the meetings they have. Imagine the pictures they have in their PowerPoint presentations. Now imagine your junk looking its best thanks to the Lawnmower 5.0. This thing is the latest Bonch trimming technology with two interchangeable heads, a standard one for taking just a little off the top, and a new foil blade to go smooth wherever your heart desires. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. That's 20% off and free shipping with the code SCARVES at manscaped.com. Nothing like a little spring cleaning in your pants.
Are you looking for the perfect gift to celebrate the moms in your life? Aura Frames are beautiful, Wi-Fi connected digital picture frames that allow you to share and display unlimited photos. Every mom I have ever given an Aura Frame to has absolutely loved it, and that includes a lot of moms I know. This is a gift that I have personally given many, many times, and it's great. I can upload photos from my phone the moment I take them, and that means that mom or grandma out there is going to get pictures of their loved ones delivered to their living room. And right now, Aura is having a great sale for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. That's AuraFrames.com, and use the code SCARVES at checkout to show your support for our show. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, when you listen to podcasts, it really just comes down to whether or not you like the sound of everyone's voices. My voice is one of the sounds you'll hear on the podcast Dr. Game Show, and this is the voice of co-host and fearless leader Joe Firestone.
This is a podcast where we play games submitted by listeners, and we play them with callers over Zoom we've never spoken to in our lives. So that is basically the concept of the show. Pretty chill.
So take it or leave it, bucko. And here's what some of the listeners have to say.
It's funny, wholesome, and it never fails to make me smile.
I just started listening and I'm already binging it. I haven't laughed this hard in ages. I wish I'd discovered it sooner.
You can find Dr. Game Show on MaximumFun.org.
Video games can make you laugh.
They can make you cry.
They can even make you sing.
We're the hosts of Triple Click.
It's a podcast about video games.
This is an exciting time for new games, from Diablo to Final Fantasy.
From Starfield to Street Fighter.
From Zelda to... oh, who are we kidding? We're just going to talk about Zelda.
Whether you play games or you just like hearing about them, we've got you covered.
Find us at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Bye.
Hey, Adam.
What's up, Ben?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda? Incredible.
Drunk Shimoda!
Yeah, I don't know if this person has a name, but during the montage of readiness, there is an unfortunate ECU of a crew member that I'm just going to call the Zitty Crewman.
I did catch that.
And it's hard to think of another shot/crew person in a future hundreds of years from now, which has the complexion that I am so familiar with by looking in the mirror. Like, look at that guy. He's still in Starfleet.
You wonder, right? Like, can't a dermal regenerator sort you out? W/R/T acne?
I mean, what kind of perfect future is this if it can't do that? It made me both thrilled and sad to see Zitty Crewman. So they are my drunk Shimoda. What about you, Ben?
My drunk Shimoda is another unnamed crewman. There's only a couple of aliens in the crew. One of them is a Vulcan. He's like one of the few people on the crew that seems to be like roughly similar height to Jake. He's way in the back in that scene when Captain Tim comes in and says we're Red Squad and we can do anything. And everyone starts chanting, Red Squad, Red Squad, Red Squad.
I don't like that moment.
He's the only one that doesn't. He's just standing in the back, not saying anything. He's clearly embarrassed by what's happening.
There's our dissenting opinion storyline that we were hoping for.
Yeah. I mean, like, that's the one thing I love about this episode is that you kind of can feel all of the interesting other stories that are available to be told. You know, it leaves us wanting more.
Yeah. And most of the time that is the mark of a episode that we like.
Absolutely. Well, do you want to see if the next episode will be one that we also like, Adam?
I sure hope it is. We'll be able to find out by going to gawk.biz/game, where Game of Buttholes Will of the Prophets awaits. And currently we are on square 77 on the porch of an nth degree / extensive research episode.
Oh boy, that's the that's probably the most controversial kind of episode we've got, Adam.
Just after that is the No Notes Caught in the Nebula ep, and I like how close those two squares are. They seem mirror related.
Well, the next episode is season 6, episode 23, Prophet and Lace. When Grand Nega Zek is deposed, Quark poses as a female to help him regain his power.
All right.
You're required to learn as you play. Roll.
All right, I'm going to get ready and roll this thing. I'm going to need your help, Adam. Will you blow on these bones? Oh boy, Adam, we are caught in the nebula for the next episode.
Cool.
We landed on that frayed Riker, the beardy, messed up hair Riker of a future that we dare not contemplate.
This is kind of a throwback for us. I feel like the early eps of Greatest Gen were with very few notes. It was just you and I shooting the breeze about an episode we had just watched. So I'm expecting that kind of vibe here.
Yeah.
I think that'll be fun.
Can't wait. And we'll take our leave here. What do we need to tell the people?
Well, I think there's a bit of news that we have yet to announce on the show. It's that The Greatest Generation and The Greatest Discovery have a Twitter handle of their own. It's at Greatest Trek.
Yeah, follow at Greatest Trek on Twitter and Instagram for all the official updates from the show. Do we want to announce who is running those accounts, Adam?
Oh yeah, we should. Much like Nog was field promoted to a rank he didn't deserve.
Unlike that, Adam.
We have field promoted Bill Tilly to the rank of social media lieutenant. He will be running the Greatest Trek Twitter account as well as the Greatest Trek Instagram feed. He's promised not to inundate those feeds with only his great comedy trading cards, which are probably the ways that most Greatest Gen friends of DeSoto would know Bill Tilly. He's been a friend of the show for a long, long time.
Yeah.
And we're happy to have him work with us on this aspect of our show.
We sure are. And we're trying to pay him a fair rate for maintaining those accounts for us. And if you're in a position to help us cover the cost of that, head to MaximumFun.org/join to support the show on a monthly basis, because this only gets more and more expensive to do.
That's right. Music on the show was created by another friend of DeSoto, Adam Ragusea, who has since left us in the dust for his wildly popular cooking YouTube channel. You can find him on YouTube at Adam Ragusea. He'll teach you how to cook anything. There's not anything that guy won't cook.
He knows all the cooking techniques. He taught me how to make a great ice cream at home without the use of an ice cream machine.
How about that? What flavor was your ice cream?
I made a strawberry ice cream because they had really nice local strawberries at my grocery store the other day that were just super, super flavorful. And I made an ice cream out of them. It's been a highlight of my week. Eating that ice cream.
I've never had produce like Southern California produce. It's a fucking delight, man.
It's good.
Yeah. Gotta keep eating those strawberries.
There's a brief window, but it's a special time, to be sure. We gotta thank our network, Maximum Fun. Listen to all the shows on Maximum Fun, especially our shows like The Greatest Discovery and Friendly Fire.
Maximum Fun's a good thing. With us, they decided to put their chips on all of our shows.
If you gotta win, you gotta hear.
We feel very lucky for that.
We feel lucky for having so many great viewers out there. And with that, we'll be back at you next time with another great episode of Star Trek Deep Space Nine and an episode of The Greatest Generation Deep Space Nine, which, I don't know, probably like we're gonna stick our faces into a frosted cake. And then when Pierce Brosnan walks into the kitchen, we'll be like, hello! You know, a Deep Space Nine episode capitalizing on the wild popularity of Mrs. Doubtfire. This is what I'm expecting from a Quark dressing as a Lady Quark episode.
Somebody will come in and say, well, what's your name? And he'll say, it's Mrs. And then he'll like look around the room and he'll see a DVD of Mrs. Doubtfire on the shelf and he'll say, Doubt. And then he'll look around a little bit more and see another DVD of Mrs. Doubtfire on the shelf and say, Fire, Mrs. Doubtfire.
It's a classic.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture. Artist owned.
Audience supported.